From the Premier League, it's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. It's international break, stock check time. We'll mull over managerial bounces, positional powerhouses and wildcard wonders. All that and more on the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. No Premier League football this week, but no shortage of Premier League headlines, meaning no shortage of talking points for us on the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. Welcome along, listener. Joining me, Kelly Summers, this week, a man that is never short of talking anyway, French football expert Julien Laron. Hi, Jules.
Hi, Kelly. Hi, everyone.
I think we can also say the same too about journalist Lars Sivertsen. Hi, Lars.
Good morning, everyone.
And we're also joined by the expertise of Lee from FPL Family.
Hey, Kelly. Hi, everyone.
And Lee is just as chatty as the others, as regular listeners will know as well. Let's begin with a Game Week 11 recap then. Fireworks weekend went off with a bang. Two more managers sacked at Villa and Norwich, despite the Canaries' first league win of the season. In terms of on-field action, Manchester City comfortably beat Manchester United thanks to 14 points from Joao Cancelo. Chelsea conceded their first open play goal of the league campaign to draw with Burnley. But don't worry, Reece James returned again with an assist. There were hauls for Conor Gallagher, and perhaps more surprisingly, for penalty save hero Ben Foster at the Emirates, who was the most bench player of the game week. Not such good news for owners of the man who missed, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, or the sent-off Brighton goalkeeper Robert Sanchez, who both ended on negative points. And the finale of the weekend saw West Ham beat Liverpool 3-2, despite the best efforts of Trent Alexander-Arnold, who got 12 points, alongside West Ham's Pablo Fornal. So let's check in on our panel's progress then. And Jules, I take my hat off to you. Seven successive green arrows. And shock, you played all your Arsenal players.
But you know, one of my visions was Ramsdale a few weeks ago, and I said to you and the show, like, yeah, I think it's a good time to bring him in once they lost those three initial games in the season. But he's been good. Half of my points came from the defense in that game week because I had Livramento, Gabriel, Trent and Ramsdale as well. So that helped out a little bit.
You didn't expect that penalty save from Ben Foster though, did you?
No, I benched him. 11 points, Ramsdale got 7. And the more I was watching the game, the more I was like, please don't. And, you know, had the game finished 0-0 or Watford had won with a clean sheet, it would have been even worse. So in the end, when Smith Rowe, who is also in my team, scored, I was kind of pretty happy. I won't lie. Sorry, Ben.
It's all right. I benched him as well.
That's even worse. You as a Watford fan.
But Jules, I'm becoming the bench queen. 27 points on my bench last weekend.
No way.
Ben Foster, anyway, that's enough about me. Lars, you are creeping towards the top 500,000 in the world. Now, your subs didn't deliver this week, but going forward, your team's looking pretty good.
I'm creeping. Is what I'm. No, listen, this was sort of back on track because in game week 10, I achieved a rather spectacular game week rank of 7 million. I mean, that was not a good one.
Wow. Oh man.
Was that 12 points?
Almost. That was one of those where I think this my season might be over here. But this weekend was decent again, so I'm crawling back up. Listen, overall rank is not terrible, but I feel like I'm within striking distance of the people who are having a good season. I just need a good run, and I need that to happen at some point. So hopefully we can hash out some good plans today.
Well, Lee, 57 points for you, four successive green arrows. And I'm pleased to say we've got you on a week where you scored more than your wife, Sam.
Yay! Very rare, isn't it? Very rare that happens. But yeah, cause it's, same as the guys, right? I'm creeping towards where I want to be. But I feel like my team isn't that diversified enough. I feel like it's a bit template right now. So whenever, you know, Rafinha gets a goal, it's kind of like, okay, great. But he's owned by quite a lot of players. Cancelo's 14-pointer was very welcome, but he's still reasonably well-owned within the community. So, yeah, I'm kind of inching up, but I need some differentials to kind of propel me up the leagues.
Well, it was a slightly higher scoring week last week then, but to be honest, I think game week 11 will probably be remembered for the two managerial sackings that happened in the Premier League in under 24 hours. We'll be discussing both of those, plus a familiar face returning to the Premier League next. So there have already been five managerial sackings this season. That's a joint high after 11 games of a Premier League campaign. And two of those came this weekend as despite winning at Brentford, Norwich sacked Daniel Farke just hours after the full-time whistle. And then on Sunday, having lost a fifth straight game to Southampton on the Friday, Aston Villa announced Dean Smith had been relieved of his duties. Talk about that in just a moment, but Newcastle now have a new manager. So let's start there. Eddie Howe is the man who takes over from Steve Bruce and tries to do what he and Graham Jones couldn't do and win at least one game this season. Lars, what impact do you see him having on this Newcastle side?
I think remembering the type of manager he was when he was at Bournemouth is that they were quite attacking and they were quite open. Now, Newcastle have one of the worst defensive records in the league, so presumably he does need to build from the back a little bit. But immediately with him coming in, I think it makes Newcastle's attacking assets a little bit more interesting.
Lee, you've been looking at this from an FPL point of view. What does this mean for managers, do you think?
Well, obviously, if you look back a few seasons ago when Eddie Howe was at Bournemouth, we all loved the double up, didn't we? We loved the Ryan Fraser, Callum Wilson axis, and we all had the double up. And it was crazy, actually, because every time that Wilson would score, Fraser would get the assist or vice versa, and there was such a good double act. So I'm interested to see how Eddie Howe can get the best out of his former Cherries players, and now they are at Newcastle together. And I think primarily and principally we have to be looking at Callum Wilson. There's no doubt that the Bournemouth team, when it was in the Premier League, was built around him. 67 goals, 31 assists in 187 matches under Howe at Bournemouth for Callum Wilson. And of course, there are some FPL assets around the periphery. Ryan Fraser may come back into our thinking, although I think that is a real task for Eddie Howe to get him back fit and firing. Alan St-Maximin, I think we'll be having conversations about him. I agree with Lars, what Lars was saying before, actually. I don't think that we're going to be rushing to get their defenders. When Eddie Howe was at Bournemouth before in the Premier League, I don't think they went a Premier League season without conceding less than 60 goals. So although I might have my eye on Matt Ritchie because he's on set pieces and he's a former Cherry under Eddie Howe, I don't think we're going to be going there immediately. So, yeah, all eyes must be on Callum Wilson, I think, at a time when, frankly, in FPL, we're struggling and we're a bit uninspired by some of the forward choices. Wilson coming in at 7.3 might just be the one.
Yeah, we also asked on Twitter, at OfficialFPL, which players from any of these three teams would you like to buy? From a Newcastle point of view, Andrew Natras has said, for the short term, it has to be Callum Wilson. Newcastle's next three home games are just too good to ignore. And there is the Howe factor, new manager bounce. Those next three home games that he talks about are Brentford, Norwich and Burnley. Now, Lee mentioned it there, Jules. Alan St-Maximin, he's been arguably their best player this season. Callum Wilson is 0.5 million more than him and he's on penalties. Who do you think is going to be the most attractive asset out of those two?
I agree with Lee. It has to be Callum Wilson. I mean, Eddie Howe made him an England international as well. I think if you look at the progress that Callum Wilson had and the Howe at Bournemouth was pretty exceptional. And that comes down to a very strong relationship between manager and player. And I think certainly one of the reasons you would think that Newcastle also went for Eddie Howe amongst a much bigger picture, but still it was that kind of relationship that he had, especially with Callum Wilson. So Wilson, I think, scored 4 goals, had expected goals of 2.8 when I looked this morning. So he's clearly doing well with the chances that he gets. So imagine if somehow Eddie Howe can build this team that create more chances for Callum Wilson in the form that he's been in so far in a dreadful team. It could get even more return for the players. So I think Callum Wilson at that price as well, I agree with Lee completely, has to be in everybody's mind.
7.3 million for Callum Wilson, owned by just over 2% of managers. Alan St-Maximin, 6.8 million, selected by over 15% of managers. So Callum Wilson, as it stands, very much a differential. Let's start with Aston Villa. They've got two good fixtures next, Brighton and Palace, before things get tough. They've been heavily linked with Steven Gerrard. What sort of impact do you think that will have?
Yeah, I think it's a very good appointment. I did the commentary for French TV on the game against Lyon in the Europa League, and I watched a few games from Rangers this season for the prep. And I have to say, last season was a very impressive season for them in the Scottish Premier League. But this season, they've been very good as well. The way he plays with his fullbacks bombing forward and having really high fullbacks, Tavernier on one side and either Barisic or Bassi on the other side, is great. And if you think about Aston Villa and their fullbacks, Matty Cash and Matt Target, is you know that with those fullbacks, TVG would play exactly the same way. And I think get a lot of from them too, whether it's assist or goals. I think Cash is already one of the highest Premier League players in touches in the opposition box, especially since Dean Smith went to a back five and Cash could push up even more. So I think for Cash and Target, if you have them in your team or if you're thinking about getting defenders, them too would be heavily involved in everything they do with the ball going forward. Defensively, it might be a bit more difficult, but certainly with the ball. So that's very interesting. And I think this is the squad, and I think Steven Gerrard will see this as it's a better squad than Rangers. It's a better project in many respects to Rangers, where he's won already. And I think he's done everything that he had to do already in Scottish football. So I think he could have a big impact on Villa and make those players, Leon Bailey, Danny Ings, Ollie Watkins, who has been really the only good player in the last five games in those five defeats, Watkins, two goals and one assist. And I think he can get this team much better than what they've been lately.
We had a few suggestions from Villa on Twitter in terms of which players you should bring in. At FPL Wonder says Leon Bailey, Cabbage and Squids. Some of these usernames we get on here are brilliant. Possibly Watkins as a Tony replacement, but, and he's very honest here, most likely none of them. What do we think in terms of attackers? There's been a lot said this week, hasn't there, Lee, about the fact that Dean Smith brought in these new players to replace Jack Grealish. He didn't really get to play them on the pitch together. So maybe we haven't seen the best of Villa from attacking point of view this year.
It's clearly a very talented attacking lineup at Villa, right? There's a lot of talent there. It's just not quite been a cohesive unit and getting them working together, Dean Smith, that he would have liked perhaps in the summer. So Stevie G has always played with Morelos up front for Rangers, and he's always had that kind of target man, that attitude up front. And I wonder who is going to be that man for him. Is it going to be Ollie Watkins? I don't know if he's necessarily a target man. Is it Danny Ings? Yeah, maybe, because Danny Ings has got the ability to drop deep and be a bit more creative and be, you know, he's obviously hardworking, Danny Ings. So very interested to see who that player is for Steven Gerrard. And of course, he played Arfield a little bit off of Morelos as well in that sort of slightly more creative foil up front. So could that be Buendia? I mean, we're speculating a little bit, Kelly, aren't we? Because we don't really know what Stevie G is going to bring to Aston Villa. But for sure, he's going to look to have a target man and some creative players off of him. And he's got the people to do it. He's got personnel to do it. It's just how he's going to set it up.
And what about Norwich then? We haven't spoken about them much on this podcast this season because of their form, but they've got their first win and they are going to get a new manager bounce. Should our opinion be changing, especially given they've got Southampton, Wolves and Newcastle next up, Lars?
I mean, with apologies to Norwich fans, they have been the worst team in the league going forward and defending, if you're looking at the XG. And I'm not entirely sure there's a new manager alive who can fully fix that. But looking at it, because there's such a dearth of good forward options and good cheap forward options, that does mean Teemu Pukki at 5'8" might be something you look at. If Norwich hire a manager you like, if you think they'll have a big bounce, you know, at that price, I confess I'd probably rather go for someone like Hwang or Josh King or something like that. But trying to create chances for Pukki is still probably going to be Norwich's plan A. So if you think there's going to be a bounce, then Pukki, and you want to be a little bit different. And for me, the only real option from Norwich, and this is a little bit to do with team structure that we're going to mention, is if you're looking to free up some money in midfield and you want a 4.5 midfielder for your bench to be your second or third guy on the bench who actually plays regularly, I'm going to bring all my usual Norwegian bias to bear and flag up Mathias Norman. I've had a low key man crush on him for a couple of years after he started playing for the Norwegian team, playing for Rostov back then. But every time he turned up for the national team, he just looked a lot better than you expected. You know, he's got real personality. He's only got one goal and one assist, but he is a player who's always looking for the forward pass, always looking to spring Pukki in behind. He likes to have a shot. He's averaging 2.1 shots per game, which is high for a midfielder. And again, I'm not suggesting in a million years that you're going to buy him and put him straight into your 11. That would be a very rogue move. But just if you want to free up some money in midfield and have him as maybe your third guy on the bench, you're probably statistically, you're unlikely to ever need him. But he might sneak you some unexpected points. So in the sort of very cheap midfielder who actually gets minutes and does have a tiny bit of forward potential, I think Mathias Norman is your boy. Also, he looks like, with those dodgy highlights, he looks like he's in a terrible boy band, which I think is only upside for me, baby.
Norman, incidentally, 4.5 million, as Lars said, and we can always rely on Lars to give us a differential 0.2% ownership at the time of recording. That's not to say he's not a bad player, it's just to say you're probably ahead of the curve. Anyway, do keep an eye on the Premier League's website and social media channels, as well as on the clubs for all the latest on those managerial appointments. Now though, given it's an international break, it's time for us to have a stock check and ask our panel how they think we should be structuring our teams. Okay, time to hone in on team structure and what the recent trends in FPL are telling us about where to splash our cash. And given the fact we are 11 weeks in and three of the top four players in FPL are defenders, I'm wondering if our opinions are changing. Those players are Joao Cancelo, Trent Alexander-Arnold and Reece James. Between them, they've scored 5 goals, provided 11 assists, collected 15 clean sheets and picked up 31 bonus points. Is defence Lee where we should be putting more of our money these days?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, these guys are defenders in name only, right? They're playing at wing back, they're playing at full back, they're arriving in the box. The heat maps for these guys, the three that you mentioned, Cancelo, James and Trent, who I think are the three to have, and you can add to that with other Chelsea defenders and other Man City defenders if you wish, but those three I think need to form the core. So yes, absolutely, Kelly. They've got the clean sheet potential that a Chelsea, a Man City or a Liverpool defender will always have. But the upside, the explosive potential for these guys to carry not just creativity and assist threat, but goal threat is incredible. And what I love about it is that in the past we'd have said, OK, well, maybe you don't want to go for Cancelo because of the pet roulette. Maybe you don't want to go for James because of the rotation risk. And I don't think you're reading out that rhetoric for Trent. But certainly for those two, we might have said that in the past. But what's great about FPL this season is if you stick a Tino Livramento there as your fifth defender and you get a bit unlucky with one of those former players not playing, he comes in and does a great job for you and has proved already this season that he himself carries a little bit of attacking threat. And Southampton themselves can be defensively astute. So I think picking those riskier attacking players at the back, knowing that you've got Tino Livramento there as fifth sub, is absolutely the way to play the game at the minute.
Do you think that's also affecting, Lee, the way we set up our teams? Because in the past, I feel like a back three has often been the most common defensive setup, at least. And it's something that I personally still go for. Are we seeing more managers, do you think, shift to going with a back four, or even maybe a back five?
Yeah, massively. And I think over the last few years of playing FPL, I've tended to kind of default to that back three. And I'll have, Trent's been a pretty ever-present for us over the last few seasons, hasn't he? And then you might go with another kind of, you try and pick the price points, don't you? A 6 million, a Diaz or a 5.5, etc. But actually, the funds are being moved more towards midfield and forwards now.
Yeah, and that's probably because during game weeks 10 and 11, there were only 5 returns of 8 or more points from forwards. Compare this to 24 from midfield and 19 from defence. Jules, it's not just Man City that doesn't need a striker, is it?
No, you're right. And I was just going to follow up the point that you and Lee made, is that because the strikers are misfiring in many respects, you don't need to play 3 up front either. Well, you can if you want to, but usually the 3-4-3 was what we would all think first. But now you can just play 2 up front because, as you said, the returns from strikers is not as good as usual. So drop 1 striker and bring another defender. We said at the start of the season, remember, it's one of my visions, they're usually quite poor. But this one, in terms of fullbacks, forget about even centre-backs, forget about Van Dijk and even Ruben Diaz to a certain extent, and just go for fullbacks because, especially those three that we mentioned, plus Livramento, they're the ones that bring you the most points. So it's very interesting, I think.
I feel like it kind of sums up my approach to strikers this year, that I still have Michael Obafemi in my squad, even though he has he has as many minutes in the Premier League as my dog. Now, of course, this is because he plays for Swansea, as it's not my dog doesn't do that. It's a slightly different situation, but no, it's just I've been completely happy to have a non-playing 4 or 5 as the third man on my bench just to free up money. I might change that now, I guess, at some point, but looking around at the striking options, they aren't great. I mean, even if Kane finds some kind of form, even if Oba starts scoring again, at the prices, I think you're right. I think the value is in looking at these attacking fullbacks, and also a lot of the interesting mid-priced midfielders, which we'll get to. So maybe beef up that section. Yeah. Strikers are bad. Strikers bad.
I can't see it lasting, though, Lars. I just can't see it lasting. These guys that we're talking about, the ones that we're writing off so easily here, the Kanes, the Lukakus, the Aubameyangs, these guys are world-class players, right? There will be a time in the not-too-distant future, I think, maybe not for this podcast, but a few weeks in the future, Kelly, bookmark this, we'll all be taking money out of our defence to fund one of these big hitters up front. I can see it happening. Conte will get the best out of Kane. Lukaku will be coming back and the rhetoric will begin around him again. And Ronaldo's Ronaldo, right? And Manchester United, in a few weeks, have got the fixtures for him to go and find a bit of form and for Ollie to find a bit of form with that team. So mark my words, they're not going away, these premium forwards.
So if they're not going away then, Lee, do we have to bear that in mind? Do we have to keep some funds free so that if Kane does go and get loads of points one weekend, we can manoeuvre our teams around to get him in? Are you saying don't go too heavy on defence, or is it just something to just bear in mind?
I think it's something just to bear in mind. I'm seeing a lot of managers kind of keeping that one premium striker position open. You know, I myself have got Vardy, and I am quite keen to sell him after the last few blanks over the last few weeks. But part of me says, well, I kind of like having that premium forward bracket open so that I can move within one transfer if I need to Lukaku, to Aubameyang if I need to Harry Kane, which I've got my eye on, given he's got a nice fixture coming up in the next game week. So I think the answer to your question is keep your eye on it, because for sure these guys are coming back on our radar at some stage.
So that's a look at how team trends might be changing, and that might be particularly helpful if you're wildcarding this week. And spoiler, one of our panel is. So let's see if we can help those who've chosen that chip along with our panellists next. Wildcards are often activated during the international break, more time to tinker with your team, to react to international injuries, or in this week's case, also maybe benefit from some new bosses in the league. So today we thought we'd offer up some options if we were wildcarding. And Jules, yours is active, isn't it?
Yeah, Kelly, and I think it's the right time to play, because my team has been doing okay recently, but I think it's a good time now when the international break and then all the fixtures coming up after that, up to Christmas and the new year, to play now. So I think it's a very interesting time. As always, for everyone who are thinking about playing their wild cards or doing their transfer, wait until as late as possible in this international break, because a lot of the Premier League players are going to play with the national team. I mean, a lot are already injured and not being involved, but some will still be. So there's always a risk of injury, and it's always good to see how well they do with the national team. And then you can make your final decision and your final picks. But yeah, I think it's a good time to play.
And Lars, very quickly, yours isn't active and you've still got yours in the back pocket. Is that right?
Yeah, and actually, I'd like to pivot back to Jules here with a very earnest and non-bantery question of actually, what for you was it that triggered it now? Was it looking at your team thinking there are too many things I want to change? Because I'm really thinking about it now, like, because I feel like my team is okay, but it's not quite where I want to be. And Sam spoke very well in last week's episode about the importance of having a few more differentials in there if you want to leap up the table. So is it that? Is that you just had too much you wanted to change?
Yeah, I think it's a bit that, Lars. I want Conor Gallagher in the team. I want Cancelo in the team as well, which I don't have right now. I think the main core of my team is decent, with Rafinha and Smith Rowe and Salah and players like that, and Trent who bring you a lot of points, and Ramsdale. But if only I could do four transfers in one weekend without taking any hits, you know, I would do it and not use the wild card. I think because the wild card is there, it's much easier to do that. Even if in the end, over my squad, I might just change, you know, five players, and it's not a huge overhaul of the whole squad. So yeah, I still think as well, after playing with the same squad, you know, making transfers, but since the start of the season, I think it's a good time now, this international break, to change something and look a bit on the longer term after leading into Christmas, Boxing Day, all those fixtures, to see what you can do.
Now, you're kind of talking me into it, because I think there are
like, do it.
No, serious note, there are like again, the Michael Obafemi situation isn't ideal. And there's like four or five things. Like, I've got both. I think the Damari Gray experiment is over. Mohamed El Younoussi hasn't really worked out for me. You know, I've got the wrong Chelsea defenders. Like, there's a lot of stuff I could do here. So I think maybe it's tipped me over the edge of thinking maybe it's time to go. Maybe it's time to push the button.
I still have Dennis Bergkamp on my bench. So, you know,
I tell you what, Lars, hopefully we're going to twist your arm, and hopefully by the end of this episode you will have wildcarded, because I think we've got some pretty good suggestions. Let's go through positionally then, and Lee, let's start in goal. This is interesting because the second most selected keeper in the game at the time of recording was Robert Sanchez at Brighton. He was sent off, and of course we had David Raya's injury a few weeks ago at Brentford as well. So who is the best goalkeeper, do you think, at the moment?
Yeah, they're falling like flies, aren't they, these budget goalkeepers at the moment. But I have to say, I'm so impressed with Ramsdale at Arsenal. So impressed. And of course, early on in the season, we were all told to trust the process at Arsenal. The first three results for them were difficult, right? They had to go away to Brentford on the opening day. I think it was Chelsea and Man City after that. They were bottom of the league. You know, woe is me. And, you know, everyone was like not looking at any Arsenal assets whatsoever. But since then, Arteta's turned it around. They've got a lot of players come back from injury. A few of them have got over some of the COVID issues that they had. A And you know what? Ramsdale has been massively impressive. I remember a moment a couple of weeks ago when, you know, he was taking a goal kick and the crowd were giving him a bit of banter and he gave the banter back. And I love that. That's the sign of a goalkeeper who is not just settled in the club that he's joined, but he's confident, he's making tons of saves. I remember that Leicester game, the save from the Maddison free kick was unbelievable. And then he went on to, you know, keep the clean sheet and keep them in that game. It's so, so good. So, yeah, it's Ramsdale for me. Absolutely. He's the one, Jules, for you to go to in your World Cup.
Don't think we needed to tell him that. I think he was already there, weren't you,
Jules? Yeah. Yeah. Game week four, I told you. Game week four, bring him in.
If you do want to spend a little bit more money on a keeper, though, Lars, because I know some people like to have a bit more guarantee of clean sheets. Not that, Jules, I'm saying Arsenal won't keep clean sheets. Where would you be looking?
Mendy has probably been, I mean, he's got the most points. He's arguably been the best goalkeeper in the league this season. If you are of a mind to drop 6.2 on a goalkeeper, which is, I think not a lot of people do, but that would be a place to go. Also, I'd be reluctant to do it because I'm not sure I want to tie up a Man City spot necessarily, but Ederson, just because, I mean, City have been the best defensive team in the league in terms of the XG against and look the most solid there. So he would guarantee you a pretty steady trickle of points. And in fact, because of the ever ominous Pep roulette, maybe you can actually afford to tie up a City place because I don't think a lot of people are going triple City with the outfielders anyway.
Let's go into defence then. We've already alluded to the fact that three of the top four scorers in FPL are defenders now. Jules, were Trent and Cancelo straight into your team? What about Reece James?
Yeah, Reece James is a good point. I mean, you could try to get James, Cancelo and Trent, but then you've got money left for Bafemi, like Lars has been doing this season. But it could work for you. But more seriously, I think it might just be two out of those three outstanding fullbacks. And then, in terms of cheaper options, Livramentos, we've highlighted already on the show. Great. One of those FPL findings, you know, the Lord Lundstrom of a few years ago. Certainly the impact that he's had this season. I think Tyrick Mitchell could be another one like that. And what Patrick Vieira is doing at Palace is very interesting. So maybe, and those are much cheaper. I like Gabriel as well because, as much as we said, no centre-backs. Simply because they're a threat now on set-pieces, Arsenal. They've hired Nicolas Jove in the summer from Man City, who is a set-pieces specialist, who's done a great job with them, both defensively and offensively. And Gabriel scored against Leicester on the corner, was very close to scoring against Watford on the corner as well. So Gabriel brings you a bit of that threat on set pieces, and you know he's going to nick a goal there and there. I wouldn't be surprised if he finished the season with 5 goals in the Premier League, for example. So that's one, I think, to keep in mind as well.
Jules, what about Tariq Lamptey as well for Brighton? So, you know, we've been talking about, we did spend a lot of time talking about Tariq Lamptey last season, then a bit unlucky with the injury, of course, but he's as much of an attacking threat as some of the bigger names and the more expensive FPL assets that we've mentioned. 0.6% as well. Decent differential to get on early, I'd suggest.
You know, FPL, obviously we play it to get as many points as possible, but it's also a game. It's about having fun. And I think in the weeks going forward, you're making the game a little bit more fun for yourself by having Tariq Lamptey in the team. Because when you're watching Brighton games, he's so active when he's on the pitch. He's doing so many things. It creates excitement in your life.
And only one of Brighton's next six fixtures ranks above three on the fixture difficulty ranking. They've got Villa and Leeds, then West Ham, Southampton, Spurs and Wolves in the next few. So not bad fixtures for Graham Potter's side. Let's move into midfield then. I think we can all agree we probably don't need to discuss Mo Salah. Jules, you're not taking him out on your wild card, are you?
No, no chance.
Oh, and no way.
The armband is glued on his arm as well. I don't care what anybody says.
I was just checking because you have been known to make the odd rogue transfer, but I think that's too rogue even for you, isn't it?
Nah, yeah, Salah is a must-have. I expect him by the end of the season to be owned by like 99%, and only Lars with a Bafemi and Bergkamp on the bench.
I've got him.
Salah, I'm kidding.
I've had him all year.
But yeah, Salah, you must have. And then if you want to go for Bruno, if you believe that at some point Bruno's form is going to pick up again, you can, but Salah is the master this season.
Is he the only premium at the moment worth considering in midfield, Lee?
He's the only one that you've got to have, right? He's the only one you've got to have. The other premium I would go to, possibly, and I've got my eye on Heung-min Son, because the way that he and Kane have got that chemistry up front, and the way that Conte in previous clubs has got the best out of those kind of that strike pairing that have that chemistry, you know, he's the one to have. Now, it remains to be seen whether, you know, Kane can refind his form. I personally think he can. But is his mind in the right place? Can Conte get him back on track? But we've already seen so far this season that Son can do the business for us in FPL. And of course, in previous seasons, he's been a regular go-to. So with the fixtures looking as they are for Spurs over the next sort of four or five, they look pretty good. Starting with that Leeds game at home in 12, which looks prime, given the way that Leeds have been defending so far this season. Wouldn't put anybody off a Son if you want to go there.
There's been a lot of good options in the mid-price bracket as well, Lars. Who's catching your eye there?
Well, I think, again, me pondering a possible wild card here. I mean, Rafinha feels like you're very close to a must-have for me. Just the fact he's just trickling along beautifully. He's returning very, very regularly when he's playing. And that's with Leeds not being very good. I mean, Leeds have had a difficult start to the season, really, but he's still been able to get you points. And I think it's reasonable to assume that Leeds are probably going to get better. And I think he's still going to do the business. I think, again, Foden is worth the risk in terms of the Pep roulette. I think Jota is worth the risk of rotation there as well, because he's almost playing as a striker when he's playing. And if you have a guy who's frequently playing almost as a striker for Liverpool, one of the best attacking teams in the league, and he's 7-5, I think he's worth the risk. But if you're having one of those or even both those, you have to be mindful of your bench. Like, you've got to have people who can come in, because there's always a risk that you could get unlucky and not just one, but both of them could get rested.
Any of those making your team, Jules?
At the moment, I was more on Conor Gallagher, who we've been saying have been an incredible impact.
Yeah,
and I think I don't see this one sort of calming down. I think now that he's got even more confidence, more momentum, and same with his Palace team, I would expect him to keep going. And the Wilfried Zaha in the same way, for example, Michael Olise, I think he's got a lot in him, a lot of talent. And we saw that in the assist that he gave at City, for example, for Gallagher. So I think there's a lot of interesting stuff at Palace. I like Bernardo Silva. I was at Old Trafford for the derby, and I was watching him play, and I was like, oh my word, I would love him to be in my team so much. And yet I know that sometimes, because he works so hard and because of the Pep roulette and all of that, it might be a bit risky to have Bernardo Silva in your team. But I just think that on his day, this season, he's been so amazing that he's almost a must-have. So I think there's a lot in midfield. Is even more than I think defensively, we all agreed in goalkeeper and in strikers pretty much. But in midfield, I think you've got so many options, whether you want to spend a lot, so much, in between, that I think that's where I would spend a lot of time.
I would like to ask Jules about Emile Smith-Rowe, because obviously you have him and you watch Arsenal very, very closely, because obviously he's been scoring goals, but his underlying numbers aren't great. But I mean, maybe he's just someone who only needs one shot per game to score. I don't know.
I'm a bit worried about overall Arsenal's underlying numbers, because I do think that they've punched a little bit above their weight in terms of attacking in that quite incredible run that they've had. So I'm a bit worried, I have to say, about Smith Rowe. I still have him for the price that he cost, even if he goes on the bench, because I think he will have some great games. And I think he's a player who is a streaky player, and I think that once he's on the run like this, again, he's got so much confidence. He said, didn't he, during this international break with England, that he gets so nervous before games. But I think being on a good run of performances helps him a lot. So it's an interesting one. I think him and Saka will always give you something. But right now, Smith Rowe is the one that returns the most. And I think you should have him in your team, because he doesn't cost too much. But yeah, I agree with you. I may be worried about Arsenal's numbers.
Okay, let's move on to the forwards position. We've already alluded to the fact that maybe we aren't getting as many points as we'd like from these positions. I wanted to start with Mikel Antonio, Jules, because it felt like at one point he was pretty essential. He's almost 50% owned now as it stands, but just two returns for him in 8 weeks. Are you going to be keeping him on your wild card?
Yeah, I think I will keep him, because, again, to go back to the striker debate, he, for the price, in terms of value for money, I think he's been really good. I think West Ham will keep doing well. I know they don't create as many chances as a City team, for example, but he's been quite efficient. He takes penalties, unless Mark Noble is on the pitch. He's good on set pieces because he's so strong. He's good in the air. So I think this will work. I would encourage everyone to keep Michael Antonio in the team.
What other strikers are you having on your wild card?
You know my father and son relationship with Harry Kane, of course. I've mentioned it on the show before. And Harry, you know I love you, so I would keep you in the team until the end, until we die together, brother. And I do think
it's
that Conte,
a bit desperate now.
I think that Conte will improve him and Son. Lee was right before. I think with Conte now, I wouldn't be surprised if Kane goes back to the Kane, or pretty much the Kane that we had before. Same with Son, same with that partnership together. So I'm keeping the faith in Harry Kane too.
I think if I do trigger my wild card, which again, I'm being talked into, I might go no premium forward still. And I know structure-wise, that's a risk, because if suddenly Lukaku comes back and starts scoring goals or something like that, it could be bad. But I think Wilson is worth a punt right now, just 2% owned. And just with that early run that Newcastle have that we've mentioned earlier, that could be worth a look. I think it's worth persevering with Antonio just because of the lack of good options, really, and the sort of reasonably priced forward option. And then again, I know it's becoming a thing, this, but Josh King, his numbers are actually not terrible. His XG per 90 is 0.53, which is something like the sixth highest in the league, incredibly. Now, quite a bit of that was racked up in that crazy game at Everton, yes. And the fixture list doesn't look great for Watford. This is also true. But I have faith that Ranieri could turn Watford into a sort of counter-attacking outfit that could hurt teams now and again. And if he stays fit, Josh King is a speedy boy. He could score some goals.
You've always been my favourite, Lars. Now, interestingly, the only striker goals in game week 11 were from forwards that were under £6 million. Teemu Pukki, Matej Vydra, Adam Armstrong and Divock Origi, kind of further enhancing our case for the fact that we shouldn't spend too much at the moment on forwards. Who do you think is best in that price bracket at the moment, Lee?
Well, I've been super impressed by three players, actually. Edouard at Crystal Palace, and I've been impressed with the way Vieira has gone about his business there this season at Crystal Palace. So we spoke before about Zaha. We've spoken before. Jules was talking about Gallagher, all of that creativity. And we've got Eze. They've still got Eze to come back, right? So quality players to come back into that team. So with all that creativity behind him, I think Edouard is worthy of a look and super, super differential right now. Ahead of a run of fixtures, which doesn't look too bad. Burnley, Villa and Leeds up next in the next three could be okay for them. Armstrong at Southampton. A couple of game weeks ago, I remember looking at him thinking, well, you know, he's wasted a lot of chances there. He's missed the target a lot, but he's getting into those opportunities, getting into those areas that we want him to be in as an FPL asset, and then scored a belter of a goal the next week. So Armstrong, one also to have a look at. But also Hwang as well. The relationship that he and Jimenez have got up front for Wolves looks so, so good. And we've seen in FPL in the past where Jimenez's partner has always done pretty well, whether it be Diogo Jota, whether it be Adama Traore, whether it be Daniel Podence. All of these guys have done pretty well and brought home the FPL bacon alongside Raul Jimenez.
Well, I certainly hope so, because I brought him in on my wildcard a couple of weeks ago as well. Now, hopefully that helps those of you that have pressed the button. I can see Lars hovering over it. Next up, though, let's check in on our panel's provisional transfer plans for game week 12. Now, game week 12 might seem like a distant conundrum that we all have to solve, but experts are always ahead of the curve. So let's check in on their plans. With the caveat, things may change given injuries and plenty can happen before that deadline. Lars, wildcard active?
You know, I'm going to move the mouse closer to the microphone. Let me see if we can I clicked the button.
Well, best of luck with your wild card, Jules. Best of luck with yours as well. Lee, what are your transfer plans?
I have to say, my team is lacking a certain Reece James right now. I've been so, so impressed with this guy over the last few weeks and the threat that he carries. So it could be a bit of a sideways move to Rudiger, to Reece James, you know. Although I've also got my eye on Son, as I mentioned before, Harry Kane, because I'm backing Antonio Conte to use this 2 weeks to get his squad into a position where he wants it to be in. So probably going to be one of those, Kelly, Reece James or Heung-Min Son, but a bit undecided at the moment.
Nice transfers very quickly. And this is always a very quick part of the podcast. Captaincy, are we all going Salah?
Yep.
Yes, I will be.
The most predictable part of the podcast there. Well, next week we'll have a little bit more of a dive into the captaincy as we approach the deadline. Guys, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast, Lars and Jules. I'm kind of jealous you've got your wild card, but kind of not, because I'm sure that's going to consume a lot of your time over the next week or so. Anyone got any good international break plans?
France against Kazakhstan. That's my plan for Saturday night. Hey, that's perfect.
In Norway, Holland, in a potential sort of who goes to the World Cup decider just after the weekend. It's going to be quite something.
Decently. What about you?
Well, I think England have got a couple of what can be described on paper as nice fixtures, haven't they, where they should rack up a few goals. So hopefully looking for Harry Kane to bag a few and get back on form, Kelly.
Brilliant. Well, guys, enjoy it, whatever you get up to. That's all from us this week. I'm off to Bournemouth. Maybe I'll see if I can find out any more about Eddie's Newcastle plans for my team. Anyway, enjoy your break. If you find yourself with a few extra minutes, we'll be keeping fantasy.premierleague.com full of FPL content. And spoiler alert, we have got an ex-Premier League striker on the FPL show with myself and James Richardson this week. So do check that out. You can also join our League 1KIKS7 and an early shout for the Game Week 12 deadline, 11 a.m. UK time on Saturday, the 20th of November. But of course, before then, we'll be back with another pod next Thursday. So we'll see you then.